The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
There is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity. I pledge that I will serve you with integrity and humility.
The most important objective for our country right now is stability. Governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Today, Rishi Sunak promises to fix the mistakes made by Liz Truss as he becomes the third Prime Minister Britain's had this year. He says there are difficult decisions to come. And we'll be hearing from the Labour MP and former Culture Secretary Ben Bradshaw about what the opposition will make of the new man in charge.
Well, it's been a very special morning at Westminster as a bright star is overtaken, casting a shadow over much of the country. Stephen, it's a rare event which only takes place every few years. But enough about the solar eclipse. We've also witnessed a new Prime Minister arriving at Downing Street.
With impeccable timing, the eclipse began just as Liz Truss was giving her farewell speech.
I am more convinced than ever that we need to be bold and confront the challenges that we face. As the Roman philosopher Seneca wrote, it's not because things are difficult that we do not dare. It's because we do not dare that they are difficult. We simply cannot afford to be a low-growth country where the government takes up an increasing share of our national wealth and where there are huge divides between different parts of our country. We need to take advantage of our Brexit freedoms to do things differently. This means delivering more freedom for our own citizens and restoring power to democratic institutions. It means lower taxes so people can keep more of the money they earn. And it means delivering growth that will lead to more job security, higher wages, and greater opportunities for our children and grandchildren.
Okay, well, that was Liz Truss speaking earlier. Big day for the Romans, with the sounds of things. And it's interesting to hear she's still admitting that she, you know, the push for low taxes was right. And, you know, this was the very much, you know, sticking to her line that this is what she thought was right for the country.
Yeah, it really feels like a sort of restatement of those things she said outside Downing Street 7 weeks ago, didn't it? And almost as if kind of all that terrible turmoil on the markets. It didn't happen. Really, really quite remarkable. I mean, I guess we're not expecting to hear politicians apologising. I suppose when as you go out, you can't say, well, it's been a terrible disaster. I'm sorry. But yeah, very much, yeah, the plan is the right one. But the timing was wrong, timing I guess, was her message.
Well, out with the old and in with the new. Rishi Sunak, now the new Prime Minister, the first non-white Prime Minister Britain's ever had. He met King Charles earlier for the ceremony, known as the kissing of the hands, although no actual kissing involved, we should say.
But the PM headed back to Westminster and to Downing Street, where the famous lectern was out again. He started off by saying that the country is facing a profound economic crisis.
Putin's war in Ukraine has destabilized energy markets and supply chains the world over. I want to pay tribute to my predecessor, Liz Truss. She was not wrong to want to improve growth in this country. It is a noble aim. And I admired her restlessness to create change. But some mistakes were made. Not born of ill will or bad intentions. Quite the opposite, in fact. But mistakes nonetheless. And I have been elected as leader of my party and your Prime Minister, in part, to fix them. And that work begins immediately. I will place economic stability and confidence at the heart of this government's agenda. This will mean difficult decisions to come. But you saw me during COVID doing everything I could to protect people and businesses with schemes like furlough. There are always limits, more so now than ever. But I promise you this, I will bring that same compassion to the challenges we face today. The government I lead will not leave the next generation, your children and grandchildren, with a debt to settle that we were too weak to pay ourselves. I will unite our country, not with words, but with action. I will work day in and day out to deliver for you. This government will have integrity, professionalism, and accountability at every level. Trust is earned, and I will earn yours. I will always be grateful to Boris Johnson for his incredible achievements as Prime Minister, and I treasure his warmth and generosity of spirit. And I know he would agree that the mandate my party earned in 2019 is not the sole property of any one individual. It is a mandate that belongs to and unites all of us. And the heart of that mandate is our manifesto. I will deliver on its promise. A stronger NHS, better schools, safer streets, control of our borders, protecting our environment, supporting our armed forces, levelling up, and building an economy that embraces the opportunities of Brexit, where businesses invest, innovate, and create jobs. I understand how difficult this moment is. After the billions of pounds it cost us to combat COVID, after all the dislocation that caused, in the midst of a terrible war that must be seen successfully to its conclusions, I fully appreciate how hard things are. And I understand too that I have work to do to restore trust after all that has happened. All I can say is that I am not daunted. I know the high office I have accepted, and I hope to live up to its demands. But when the opportunity to serve comes along, you cannot question the moment, only your willingness. So I stand here before you, ready to lead our country into the future, to put your needs above politics, to reach out and build a government that represents the very best traditions of my party. Together, we can achieve incredible things. We will create a future worthy of the sacrifices so many have made, and fill tomorrow and every day thereafter with hope. Thank you.
Okay, there is the new Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, delivering his first speech after being appointed to the role. He, outside number 10 Downing Street, hitting on his policy priorities, you know, talking about delivering the 2019 manifesto and pledging to work, that this government will work with integrity, professionalism and accountability at every level, not escaping the irony of the music that you could vaguely hear behind, coming from the street behind him, which was Kaiser Chiefs, I Could Predict a Riot. let's bring in Bloomberg Opinion columnist Marcus Ashworth, who's with us in studio. Marcus, your thoughts?
Well, I'm brimming with hope. It's hope which kills you in the end, isn't it? A better speech hearing it the second time, perhaps. He set himself a very high target on a raft of different things, which brought down his two predecessors. But perhaps also, you know, quite the power move in claiming, probably rightly, that it wasn't just Boris Johnson's sort of sole mandate to govern, and therefore he's, thank you very much, I'll take all that. And whilst being as polite as he possibly could be with to Liz Truss, making it very clear he's there to clear it all up. So a lot to do. He set himself very high standards, which will make his life, you know, ever so difficult when inevitably events, dear boy, events, you know, and that's he's got a lot of stuff to sort out.
Well, let's talk about that, sorting out that particular mess of the last 7 weeks. Where are investors on the UK at the moment? How much have they forgiven, and how much are they prepared to kind of look ahead and say, well, you know, we've got a, you know, a reliable guy in charge now?
Forgiven, I don't think that's going to come along well. But, you know, theoretically, if you look at, say, spread of gilts over bunts, we're back to where we were before Kwarteng stood up. I think with regards to, you know, interest rates generally around the world, things have been very unpleasant this last year. You know, gilt yields are more than double, but we seem to have wiped out very quickly a lot of the evident self-harm is what lies underneath. I know Bloomberg Economics reckon it's going to be as much as 1.5% off growth, which to me, my mind, seems horrendous. But then, you know, I think that you just look at the PMI numbers which came out yesterday, we've sort of seen the evaporation of any hope or pretense that the economy is flatlining. We are, I think, headed into recession. I cannot see on anything that Rishi Sunak said of where the growth is going to come from. I mean, OK, we now understand that Liz Truss's aspirations were ill-planned and certainly ill-delivered. And I think that, therefore, I'm really hoping, along with Jeremy Hunt, that there is some semblance of not just filling that fiscal gap noted, you know, put up by the OBR as to we have to make an extra $30 billion of cuts from somewhere, that they can move on from that and get on to something which could make the economy not, you know, be in anything other than just the mildest of recessions.
Right, yeah, I mean, to stay with our musical theme, to quote the chorus, forgiven, not forgotten, the past 7 weeks of Liz Truss's premiership. Boris Johnson tweeted just after Rishi Sunak finished speaking, congratulations to Rishi Sunak on this historic day. This is the moment for every Conservative to give our new PM their full and wholehearted support. Do you think that message coming from Boris Johnson, the first time we've heard from him since the statement to say that he wasn't running in this contest, is going to help to unite the Conservative Party behind Rishi?
Well, I mean, look, the interesting thing about having Rishi back is that at least someone who is sort of responsible from 2019 onwards, well, you know, say 2020 technically, you know, at least there's someone who you know, can take the beginning, the middle and perhaps the end of this government at least into context. I think a lot of the problems that were caused by Boris Johnson's, you know, premiership, Rishi has his fingers all over. I don't think that, you know, particularly the corporate tax and the national insurance rises would naturally have been done by Rishi Sunak. He did it in reaction to what his prime minister at the time was demanding and wanting to spend all sorts of different parts of the economy, particularly obviously the NHS. And so in some senses, he's got to unwound a lot of his own mess, perhaps not caused by him initially, but certainly he had to enact. So there's a lot of stuff here which, you know, doesn't add up on first thing. He's got to somehow drive a path through with a coach, a cabinet of all the talents, which is going to be very interesting, where some people you think might be very good. Therese Coffey, for instance, Deputy Prime Minister, no more, I'm sure, but will she stay at health? There's no reason to suggest she wouldn't do an excellent job there. Where does Michael Gove come back in? You know, Dominic Raab. There's a lot of interesting characters who we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years, and they're back again.
Mm.
Or are they?
And we're expecting Jeremy Hunt is likely to stay in place. That would be a sensible
I'm
move.
I'm told that's almost certain happened. And I think we would know by now, I think, if it wasn't going to be, because it makes sense for Rishi to at least keep that continuity, because clearly Jeremy Hunt was brought in to clean up the mess, and that's exactly the message he's just sent that he's going to carry on doing. You've got to feel slightly for Jeremy Hunt that he's got the predecessor looking over his shoulder, marking his homework. But I think the two of them together get it right, which is we've been saying for, wouldn't be great if so-and-so and so-and-so could get together and do it out. But this time, we were promised that with Rishi and Boris. It ended badly. But this one, somehow, for the next 2 years, one hopes has got to stick.
Okay, Bloomberg opinion columnist Marcus Ashworth, thank you so much for your analysis of that first speech from Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers, they're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
So, over to the opposition. How to oppose the third government of the year. Ben Bradshaw was the Labour MP for Exeter and former Culture Secretary under Gordon Brown. We've been speaking to him and asking him if Sunak will be much harder to oppose than Liz Truss.
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, he's a different leader with a different personality. We don't really know very much about what he intends to do with the mess that he's inheriting from Prime Minister Liz Truss. I mean, he talked a lot about his philosophy and his programme during the summer's Conservative Party leadership campaign. But of course, since then, the Truss government has knocked another $40 billion hole in Britain's public finances, which is going to have to somehow find a way of filling. So I think, yes, relatively speaking, compared with both Liz Truss and Boris Johnson, the expectation is for a little bit more stability, which goodness knows would be very welcome. But I think he's got a lot of challenges in terms of ongoing divisions within his own party and an absolutely dreadful economic inheritance.
Well, after that disastrous mini-budget, I think it's clear that the Conservatives are going to tack towards the centre on economics, perhaps going a return to some of Boris Johnson's sort of broadly centrist fiscal policies. That's going to be tricky for you, isn't it? That's going to be occupying your territory.
Well, possibly if that's what happens. But of course, the recently appointed Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, has spoken and warned about eye-watering decisions needing to be taken on the public finances and on public spending as a result of the damage done by the Conservative government over the last few months, which sounds to me rather worryingly like a return to the kind of failed austerity policies that Britain suffered under the Cameron-Osborne regime after 2010, which most economists now agree was a total disaster and has resulted in growth half the rate in the last 12 years under this Conservative government than we enjoyed under the previous Labour government. So I think that's certainly something to look out for. How does he balance the books and how does he balance the priorities between tax increases and spending cuts? Because as many of your listeners may know, Britain's public services are on their knees. They're in a much, much worse state than they were when we inherited them, and the Labour government inherited them in 1997, then there's really very little, if anything, left to cut.
Nonetheless, the decisions are going to have to be made, because if we've learned anything from the past 7 weeks, it's that the UK must project an image of being fiscally stable. So if it were the alternative situation and Labour was in charge, how would you pay for those public services? Is it just more tax rises?
Well, we've already laid out a number of areas where we would have a different priority. For example, we would have already extended the windfall tax on the energy companies raking in huge unexpected profits as a result of energy prices. We would also abolish non-dom status and the tax benefits given to private schools in this country. So we have a number of tax raising measures, but we've also made very clear we would govern along strict fiscal rules, only borrowing to invest, not borrowing, as Liz Truss and the Conservative government tried to do in order to give tax cuts to the richest. And it'd be very interesting to see whether Rishi Sunak himself has been at the centre of controversy over Britain's system of non-doms, is prepared to move on that. But I certainly think that we hope by next Tuesday, by next Monday, when if it is still Jeremy Hunt, the Chancellor comes to Parliament with the latest in a series of financial statements or mini budgets, that it'll be clearer as to where their priorities lie. But Rishi Sunak has not really had a reputation as a redistributionary chancellor. Yes, he took emergency measures during the COVID crisis, which were absolutely essential. But he then fell out with Boris Johnson, if you remember. And one of the reasons he says he resigned back in July was not just because of the scandals that were engulfing Mr. Johnson, but also because he didn't believe Mr. Johnson was capable of making the difficult decisions that he believes the economy requires.
Ben, I think the parallels with the 1990s and Black Wednesday, when the Tories lost their economic credibility, are strong. But what is much less comfortable for Labour, though, if you do go on to win the election, is that unlike last time, there is going to be no money to spend, is there? It is going to be a very tricky time to be taking over.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, if there were an election anytime soon and Labour were to win, we would inherit a situation far, far worse than the one we inherited in 1997, and I think we're not under any illusions about that. And our leader Keir Starmer and our shadow finance minister Rachel Reeves have made quite clear that there would be very painful decisions to be made. The other thing, of course, that we would do, which I very much doubt Rishi Sunak will be able to do, because I don't think his party will let him, is to begin to repair our damaged relations with the European Union. We've lost 20% of our trade since Brexit, as a result of the dreadful deal that Boris Johnson struck. And I think a Labour government would be in a much better position to begin to rebuild those relations and get rid of some of the barriers that are causing so many problems to businesses and financial institutions in terms of trade, not just for the European Union, but also the rest of the world.
Ben, the poll numbers are very favourable for Labour at the moment, but we're a long way away from a Conservative election if you believe what you hear from the Conservative MPs and ministers that have been speaking. Is there a danger of complacency over the next 2 years? Could Labour lose that lead?
I don't think so. And yet again, I mean, Keir Starmer came and spoke to Labour MPs in our weekly meeting this week. And certainly there was no complacency from him. And if you looked at our recent party conference, which was generally judged to have been the most successful Labour Party conference since the last one under Tony Blair, there was certainly no complacency there. There was optimism, as you say, because of the political situation here and the possibility for the first time really since under Tony Blair of a Labour government. But definitely no complacency, and that's something that goes very deep in kind of the Labour soul, memories of 1992 when perhaps there was a sense that we were going to win, and we sort of took that for granted, and of course we didn't, and suffered another 5 years of Conservative government. So no, absolutely no complacency, and no illusions about the scale of the task that would face us.
Ben, you said at the start of this year that you're planning to step down as MP for Exeter at the next election. That seems like a very long time ago now. Here we are in October with Labour with a massive poll lead. The next election looking, you know, rather different to how we expected perhaps a year ago. Are you wondering if your decision was a bit hasty?
No, not at all. If anything, it makes me sleep even more easily about the fact I'm stepping down. And one of the reasons I decided to step down and didn't do so earlier was I had enormous amount of faith in Keir Starmer's leadership and his ability to turn things around after the disaster of Jeremy Corbyn. I mean, I kind of hung on really during the Corbyn years to try to see my party onto a better trajectory, and it's now on that. It's got better since then, but it just confirms me in my view. And also, it's very important that Keir has a new influx of Labour MPs, talented young people who can fill the ministerial jobs that he will need to fill. Because at the moment we have a parliamentary Labour Party that's quite thin, quite hollowed out after the disastrous defeat in 2019. So I think it is important sometimes for people like me of my age and stage. I've been in government, I've been in the cabinet, to step back and make room for new talent to come through.
What then do you feel is going to be the picture come the next election, given that you won't have such a personal stake in it, but is there going to be, is it really going to get much better for Labour than it is now?
Well, it'd be difficult to imagine how it could get better for Labour than it is now in terms of the opinion polls, because we've never seen opinion polls, I mean, like it. Some of them even predict that there would be a Canadian-style wipeout for the Conservatives. I don't think that's ever really a realistic prospect. A massive majority for any party brings with it its own problems. And when we discovered in 1997, quite a lot of Labour MPs were elected then who didn't expect to be elected, and the party had not really done proper due diligence on them, and one or two of those came a cropper. So look, no, but I'm more optimistic than I've been at any time since Tony Blair was our leader that we can win an election. And I think also the country is going to be facing I think the thing that makes me most certain about that is if you look at where the public's priorities are not actually tax cuts, and particularly not tax cuts for the rich. They are public services, inequality, and investment in our dilapidated infrastructure. And that's where the Labour Party is. And for all the changes in the Conservative Party, they are still extremely divided. They haven't really made their mind up what they want to do with Brexit. There was never a unified or a unitary vision of Brexit, and I think that's been their problem, and that battle is still being fought out. It was fought out under Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and I suspect it's likely to be fought out under Rishi Sunak too. So I think the combination of a policy programme, which is where the British people are, and a united forward-looking party under Keir Starmer means that our prospects would still be good at the next election, whether it's now in 6 months' time or not for another 2+ years.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Success. It's discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management and investment banking firms in the industry. Stifel. It's where success meets success. Start your journey at stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.